Blog Talk Radio.
For the fourth time, I've returned to the United Nations in New York City, where the Women's Missionary Society of the African Methodist Episcopal Church holds their annual leadership conference. This is, in fact, their 25th anniversary conference. The WMS is recognized as an NGO, a non-governmental organization of the United Nations, and has members and member churches throughout the United States, Africa, Central and South America, the United Kingdom. India has recently joined the ranks of the AME denomination with more than 40 churches in the last 7 years. I will interview several members of the WMS, including the first vice president, as you get a sense of what takes place and what it's like to be a missionary around the world. Dr. Shirley Kaysen-Reed is the international president of the Women's Missionary Society of the African Methodist Episcopal Church, and the host episcopal supervisor is Reverend Dr. Jessica Ingram here in the New York area. We'll also recap some of last night's dramatic congressional vote to approve the bill to end the federal shutdown and raise the debt ceiling. This is Carol Copeland-Thomas, and you are listening to Focus on Empowerment. Hello, my friends. Really excited to be here in New York City, a fourth time that I've had a chance to be at this wonderful conference. There are probably 100 people here all total who will come to this two-day conference talking about world issues, not just what's taking place in their local churches, but what's taking place around the world and the impact that the Women's Missionary Society of the African Methodist Episcopal Church has and the impact that it has not only on the local society, but also around the world. There are about thousands of churches within our structure. I'm a longtime member of the AME Church. There are over 2 million members, about 8,000 churches. And as I had mentioned, India is our latest location. There are over 40 churches that are located in the country of India and other churches around the world. One of the strongest links really is the Missionary Society, a society that started as part of the Dorcas Society in the mid 1800s by Sarah Allen, who was the second wife of Bishop Allen, who was one of the co-founders of the AME Church. At that point in time, just really trying to help out the ministers who were traveling around the country doing their work, and they would come back dusty and their clothes were a little tattered, and they just needed some tender, loving care. And she and her wonderful women provided that. From that evolved the Missionary Society that now takes care of projects large and small throughout the world. And I'm waiting on one of our guests to come back, the first vice president of the WMS, Deborah Taylor King. She's going to just fill us in on some of the details that occur within the Missionary Society and what it's like, and then we're going to move on and have a couple of audio clips based on what we've done today. Seated next to me from the great state of Texas is Deborah Taylor King. She is the first vice president of the Women's Missionary Society. You should really see her. She's so dialed up. She looks fantastic, really looks great, does a lot of wonderful things, and we on speakerphone now. We're going to talk to Deborah, find out more about her and the role that she plays within WMS. Deborah, welcome.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity.
Great.
My position as first vice president is to ensure that we have the right programs in place so that we can have a global presence and the global awareness to do the things that are in our mission segments, such as to continue the ministry of Jesus Christ by service and witness in the world. And what we pride ourselves on is the fact that we are present in 32 countries and 5 nations. And our work is in every one of those countries and nations. And what we try to do is to basically fulfill the commission of Jesus Christ, such as to go to Judea, to Jerusalem, to Judea, Samaria, and to teach and to train, and to feed the hungry, to clothe the naked, and to give thirst to those that are thirsty. So those are basically the mandates that God has given us, and for Jesus Christ's ministry, and that's what we try to continue. You know, it's a big role, and so often you can actually play a couple of audio clips after your interview of some of the actual work that's going on in the 20th district and the official project as well, the 7th district and the 1st. But so often people will say, we have so many problems at
code, he's there for Jerusalem, and Jerusalem is our home. And we always going to say, oh, good.
United States are foundational issues that we have not had to face in this millennium, that they are facing from a longitudinal issue area on a daily basis. We have very basic sanitation issues in Malawi that don't exist in Zimbabwe. And so this past year, we're developing what I call the analytics that we can sell to corporations, other not-for-profit organizations who have sustainable missions in issue areas, such that we can begin to bring much-needed resources into these countries. We are working with community development partners to develop a proposal template such that when my husband's assignment is over, we'll be able to pass that along to the issues that go beyond us. So we're working in the area of sanitation, and they directly impact public health concerning AIDS, So the issues that we are dealing with are public health crises, but again, logistically, they are developed from an area that is just very basic in terms of human needs. I would welcome hearing any insight that you may have concerning ways that we can develop partnerships. We're looking to develop partnerships with all types of corporations who are currently in Africa, working currently in those countries. But there are lots of corporations in the United States that have a presence in Africa that are looking for maybe a specific project, maybe to sponsor a young person, for example, that may have impact in the work that we do. I will also say that disproportionately in all three countries, we have an underabundance of training available to our young people. The majority of our populations in Malawi, for example, almost 70% are under the age of 40. Most of them are unemployed. Now, we know what unemployment has in terms of a direct impact in our country. You can develop in terms of the topography of poverty, what impact that will have in a country like Malawi, where the average income is $500 a year. So I say that to say I love hearing about the impact of youth and the focus on youth, and that's another area that we're working on.
I want to just give you a little background information. The Campaign to End Fistula is an initiative of the United Nations Population Fund. It was first adopted by the Women's Missionary Society in 2007. And through the WMS status as a United Nations non-governmental organization, it's an ongoing effort to impact the Millennium Development Goals. In 2011, our president, President Reed, instituted the Fistula Campaign as an ongoing project of the Missionary Society, which comes under First Vice President Deborah King. So we are just so passionate about this effort to do something for the Fistula Campaign. And if you know anything about it, you can go online and look it up and to find out that this is a medical term that's used for women who are prolonged in going through pregnancy and before having the baby, something happens. They either have a hole in the vagina area or feces drip. This is the African women. This happens. And so what we want to do, and if you can imagine how devastating such this is, then your heart will go out to these ladies to help them.
Well, that was information about the 20th District, and Christy Jackson's husband was elected last year in Nashville, Tennessee, to the AME Church, the highest level that you can serve as a leader, and that's the Episcopal leadership role as a bishop of the AME Church. Christy is an attorney and now performing her role as the Episcopal supervisor. And then Sister Pitts was talking about the Fistula Project that unfortunately she knows personally something about. We're going to move on very quickly and now play reports and highlights from the 7th Episcopal District, one of the strongest districts in our denomination, and that's the District of South Carolina. Sister Mary Ann Norris is the Episcopal Supervisor, and then also the First District, of which I am a part of, and Dr. Jessica Ingram is the Episcopal Supervisor, and Sister Carolyn Clements is going to read the report. So give you a sense of what we do, and what we do domestically and internationally as well. This is our domestic report from the 7th and the 1st District.
In honor of our Episcopal Supervisor, Mother Mary Ann Norris, our initial donation for the library was 1,000 books. Workshops and training sessions were held throughout the 7th Episcopal District to promote gender equality and the empowerment of women. The focus of trainings dealt with elevating and expanding the minds and hearts of young girls and women for leadership and missionary ministry. Workshops and trainings were also held to bring awareness to the physical and sexual abuse and neglect of young girls. In our efforts to reduce child mortality and to improve maternal health, we have provided financial and in-kind support to local agencies and organizations such as March of Dimes, HALOS, which means helping and lending outreach support, Project, and My Sister's House, which is a shelter for battered and abused women and their children.
Annual NGO liaison report, NGO district report. All our conference missionaries, YPD, YWI, are engaged in activities that fulfill the United Nations Millennium Development Goals, addressing issues of human rights, gender equality and empowerment of women, primary education, combating hunger, poverty, HIV/AIDS, malaria, and other chronic diseases, reducing child mortality and improving maternal health, environmental sustainability, and global partnering. I will bless the Lord at all times, and his praise shall continually be in my mouth, because it is in him, through him, by him, that I live and move and have my being. I'm going to give you highlights of the highlights, so you can read the rest on the website. God is not unjust. He will not forget your work and the love you have shown him as you have helped his people and continue to help them. Hebrews 6 and 10. Bermuda provided financial support to Winona Jennings Orphanage or School in Africa, providing funding that enabled them to install new bathroom facilities. Delaware partnered with Pregnancy Center and an HIV/AIDS Ministry and Counseling Center under the Division of Public Health and National Testing Day. New England, domestic violence initiatives continue and is extended where they partner with other agencies and shelters. The YPD are involved. They are continuing their anti-bullying program involving various youth organizations and utilizing social media and public service announcements. The extension of the Domestic Violence Initiative for Boys and Girls Club, where they provide supportive services and companionship to child victims. New Jersey, financial support to Sierra House, a home for battered women. The YPD provided $1,000 to Wilberforce University in self-denial give-back campaign. And they also engaged in 200 acts of kindness, where they completed 100 acts of kindness in the month of December 2012. New York, Bridging the Borders. We returned to St. Bernard Parish in Louisiana to continue the project of rebuilding homes. Overseas missions, Haiti and Mozambique, Africa, providing goods and services and water filters for several communities and funded a water well in Tigray, Ethiopia, in partnership with Charity Water. Assisting those re-entering the workforce with resume writing in HOPE Project, and partnered with Bread for the World in letter writing campaign to President Obama to end hunger, resulting in a collection and presentation of over 30,400 signatures to the White House. The YPD provided financial support and services to the community of Far Rockaway and a women's rehabilitation center from the outcome of Hurricane Sandy. Western New York opened two emergency care centers, one in Albany and Buffalo, supplying basic items such as canned goods, etc. The YPD continuing in fourth year of preparing and serving Thanksgiving dinners to 125 residents in Viva Incorporated, the largest refugee center in the United States. Philadelphia partnered with Rural Missions Pennsylvania migrant farm workers, packing over 600 kits for distribution to the workers, providing services, clothing, toys to shelters. After 25 years, the journey continues, and still we rise. We have continued to stay on the wall, helping to rebuild broken bodies, broken minds, broken spirits, through many challenges from without and from within. but compelled by the compassion of Jesus Christ and the vision of the kingdom on earth. We are moved into action. And as we present our plans to him, we know that surely they will be successful. As we press onward to the next level, does not yet appear what we shall be. But we believe our latter 25 years of service will be greater than the last.
Well, just an idea of some of the work that goes on all the time, every day, throughout the 20 districts in the AME Church. This whole conference is put together in part because of two very hardworking people I want to recognize. I typically have them on the show, but they have been gracious enough to allow other people to serve, Lorraine Dickerson and Carolyn Scavella. They're the tag team. They put this conference together and do a great job. I'm sitting next to a great leader here in the church, Reverend Gloria White Hammond. She, as to say, no, she'll pass this year, but she has done so much work in terms of mission work in the greater Boston area and also in Sudan and around the world. So there's some really dynamic people who are here, not just all women. There's some dynamic men who are here. And very quickly, I want to introduce my previous king, from Elizabeth City State University in North Carolina. He has a compelling story to share with us. He is one of our guest speakers in the afternoon, so we're very glad to see him with us today. Martrita, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you. It's so great to be here among such an a distinguished body of women here that have been championing the rights of people not only in the United States, but people all over the world. They're celebrating their 25th annual NGO conference. It's an honor to be here. It's also an honor to be here as the newly elected city councilman-elect for Elizabeth City, North Carolina.
Congratulations. Wow, that's a great accomplishment.
Thank you so much.
Tell us about what it took to get to that point. You just didn't fill out ballot papers and then got on the ballot and then walked into office. It didn't happen quite that way. Tell
that's
us
right.
about your story.
That's right. Well, if I could sum it up, I would just say delayed but not denied. That being said, originally I was denied to run for city council. My candidacy was challenged by a local Republican party leader in Pasquotank County, North Carolina. And when you think about Pasquotank County, North Carolina, and you think about the Supreme Court's recent ruling striking down Section 4 of the Voting Rights Act, Pasquotank County was one of those counties that was under that act that had to get the pre-clearance under the Section 4 Act. So everything just happened at once. After the Supreme Court struck down Section 4, the North Carolina legislator passed the most restrictive voter ID law that we've seen in some years. And not only that, after I filed my candidacy, 10 days after that, the Republican Party chair challenged my candidacy and went to the local Board of Elections, and they ruled against me. Mm. So it's been a long, tough road. I went on to Raleigh, North Carolina, to the State Board, and the State Board unanimously agreed that I should have been allowed to run in the first place. And the thing about it is they did not realize that it would receive so much statewide and national attention. I really believe that this was something that was done intentionally, and this was something that was done that they thought that was going to be swept under the rug. They had no idea that it was going to be thrust into the national spotlight. And now because of what they're doing, I'm hoping to become a stronger advocate for our voting rights and a stronger advocate for young people and telling them that we definitely have to let our voices be heard and participate in what's going on.
Well, I dare say, and I'm such a rabid person about voting, I was going to do my last segment on this message that took place yesterday. You were the perfect candidate and the perfect guest to have on my show. I would imagine that the Tea Party has something to do with your opposition and the fact that they operate by blocking local candidates. And they operate by dealing with policy on the local level and they move all the way up. You're a living example of that.
That's right. I am definitely a living example of that. And another thing that people didn't realize is that the rights of ECSU, Elizabeth City State University, my university, where I am a senior majoring in political science pre-law, Mr. Kibler, the Republican Party chair, has been challenging the rights of students to vote here since 2008, and he has publicly stated year after year, and he doesn't do it during a presidential year. He
to always challenge us both to our midterms and have a municipal election. That's what he challenged.
And may I ask you, what's the location where they moved the polling place and they were going to have students who walk along a very unsafe road to vote? I know what color.
Okay, that's not the place. Those are our friends all across the other side of the state in the mountain. They were so significant because it was there in Wauconda County, North Carolina, in the mountains, that small mountainous county that where Appalachian State University is located, where they removed the precinct that the college students very used to vote in. And they moved it again to that place outside of the city,
right
space.
Right, the people that they were going to walk on
that
space. Right,
and
to possibly get
hit. That's right. And all of these things happened on the same week.
Yeah.
The governor signed the voter ID bill the same week, and the Wauconda County removed the precinct away from Appalachian State the same week. And the same week, I was denied by the Appalachian County Board of Elections to run for office, which is my constitutional right.
You are a courageous gentleman. I look forward to your presentation later on this afternoon.
Thank you.
And I'm so glad that you're on my show because, again, it lets my listeners know the importance of voting. Again, I'm rabid about voting. I'm very disappointed right now that in my area of Boston, we only had a 31% turnout
wow.
with our primary election for a very important mayoral election.
Oh, yeah.
And 6% stayed home. So the importance of voting is so critical. And here you have to fight
That's
to
right.
get back on the ballot
That's
and
right.
to protect your voting rights in a state that is under attack now,
mm-hmm.
where people of color are under attack, young people are under attack in terms of voting rights,
mm-hmm.
and it leads all the way up to federal government shutdown. And
right.
what the Tea Party, in this case, is trying to do in terms of destroying and blocking progress in this country. You fight on, my brother.
Thank
fight
you.
On. Thank you so
for
much for joining us on my program.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right.
Yes.
Take care now. Well, this is our show today, and I hopefully that it's been an eye-opener for you to see what work is going on in the Women's Missionary Society, again, trickling down all the way to voters' rights and making sure that voting rights are not suppressed around the United States. Montrevious King is a living example of what it took to get on the ballot. He could have given up. He could have just said, no, I'm just not going to deal with this. But, again, an orchestrated, manufactured strategy to suppress voting rights for people of color, for women, for students around the United States. This is mission work, too. Social action is definitely mission work. We had Deborah Taylor King on earlier, and as first vice president, her responsibility deals with social action. So when you look at the AME Church, when you look at many of the other denominations, the Baptist Church and others, and you're looking at just a lineage and a heritage of people who have struggled but have always had faith and vision. And faith and vision mixed with action is a powerful, powerful combination. We salute all of the women of the Missionary Society, all 800,000 of them around the world in the 20 districts of the AME Church. For more information, go to their website. You can go to www.wms-amec.org. Let me repeat that, www.wms-amec.org. That is the website for the Missionary Society, the Connectional Missionary Society. And the AME Church website is www.ame-church.org. Hope you've enjoyed the show. We'll be back next week. We've got lots going on, webinars, our conference taking place. Have a great weekend, and we will see you next week.